And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello! Today is Wednesday, January 25th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I am Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Please listen to us any way you can get your podcast. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, send us thoughts, send us questions. We want to hear what you're talking about, what you're thinking about. Talk to us about the games that are coming up this weekend. They're going to be good. NFL division round is now over. We're down to the final four in the NFL. And the Giants are gone with the wind. They're gone. They're done. And in 1 week, all of a sudden, I haven't heard one Giant fan whistling. I don't know where they all went. I don't know what happened since the Minnesota win, but they're gone. I don't know what happened to them. Okay?
You're saying that awfully gleefully, G.
Very gleefully. Philadelphia beats the Giants 38-6. The Giants are never in this game from the get-go.
They actually had seven. They hit the extra point.
They don't have Brett Maher kicking for them.
The Philadelphia is up 14-0 in the first, 28-0 at the half. They outgained them 416 yards to 227. Jalen Hurts was in control from the first drive. The Philadelphia D had five sacks. It had an interception. It had a forced fumble. Daniel Jones was rattled. The whole Giant team was rattled. And they have waved goodbye to the season. Guys, let's start it off with the Giants.
Well, I think the game was over at the opening kickoff. This was unfortunately never a game. The Giants were exposed. The defense could not stop Philly's offense at all during the whole game. Philly racked up 268 yards on the ground. Daniel Jones was under duress all game. The lack of weapons at wide receiver really came to the forefront. And there's really not much to say except Philly proved that they were the much, 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 much better team that game. Can't take away the Giants. If you're a Giant fan, you've got to be happy with the season they had. You've got to be happy with the direction under Schoen and Dable. And we'll see where they go in the offseason. We'll see what they do with Jones and Barkley, among others. That'll be for the offseason. But for today and for this past week, just never a game. Darren?
Easily my most frustrating game of the week, and I'm going to tell you why. Because all season long, I'm saying Daniel Jones hasn't played well against a good team. All season long, the Giants haven't beaten anybody of quality. All season long, I'm saying that this team is playing well, but they're playing well against teams that they should beat. They struggled offensively against Washington, Philly, Dallas, even Baltimore and Jacksonville when they played them, and definitely Seattle. Right, so the teams that you thought were decent in their division and the teams that were decent on their schedule, they struggled with. And yet I fell for the damn hype that they were going to keep this game close. I was the guy that said, listen, everybody's talking about how close they were in the last game. They were down 19-0, and Philly called off the dogs, and I said it. And I said it in the show. And then I sat there, and it's the only game I got wrong this week because I'm an idiot, and it should have been the easiest one for me to pick, and I'm really angry. Here's the thing. Eagles will march right down the field somehow, some way. They get a matchup with Scott against the Love, against the safety. Big play. March right down the field. So the Giants start coming back, and they're moving a little bit. And then they get – it's like third and three. Jones tries to scramble. He gets tripped up. So it's fourth and eight. They go for it. And at the time, I didn't really have a problem with it. So I'm not going to criticize it right now. But he got sacked in a second. What I took from that – was that Evan Neal is a really nice guard, and he is not going to be able to play right tackle against speed rushers at all. And I know he's coming off a little bit of a meniscus injury, but Hassan Reddick ate his lunch all night long. There was pressure, but it wasn't coming from the left. It was coming a little bit up the middle, and it was coming from the right. And that tells me that it's Evan Neal. Now, listen, I'm not saying the kid's a bust or a bad player. I just think he's going to be a really athletic guard. And I don't think he's fast enough to play tackle. After that, it was 14-0. They were never in the game. They had the one pass where they almost got the first down, and then the Hodgins only catch, he juggled it. fell backwards, lost the half yard. They punted. Here's my only issue with Dable in the entire game. You're down 28-7. You start moving the ball a little bit. You're at your own 45. It's fourth down. You're in the fourth quarter, and you punt? Basically, you want to try to keep it close? What's the mentality? You're not going to get the ball back three times, genius. You can't punt there. Even if you don't make it, you're not at your own six. You're at the 40 freaking five. What are you doing? You're sitting there the whole game trying to coach to win, and then all of a sudden you're coaching not to get blown out. I just thought it was bad. You know, the first line I had, Kev, was the first line you said, never really a game, and it just wasn't. You know, I don't know. I mean, the Eagles just were a far better team. The Giants could not keep up with them. It looked like they almost didn't really have any plan or any effort on the defensive end, and that was the part that disappointed me. Didn't expect the offense to do anything. Really didn't. But I was stunned at how bad the defense was. G?
Yeah, the way they came out and played, this is definitely one of Dable's bad games for the season. He's probably the coach of the year. He has yielded them.
I don't agree with that, even though he might win it. I don't agree with that.
Okay, I actually do. I do think he is, but I think this was one of his few really bad games. I didn't like some of his calls, but, you know, you're getting blown out. No matter what he does at this point, I don't think would have helped in that particular game. But that's probably – this is we basically say goodbye to the Giants for the season. They're going to have two big question marks going into the offseason. Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley.
I'd be stunned if Saquon's back. And I hate to say it like that. I just don't think they're going to pay him the money that they need because they're going to pay it to Jones and try to get other talent around them. Just my take. The way Mara ran that press conference along with Shane was more like, yeah, he's a really good back. They didn't say anything like special about him. Oh, but the Daniel Jones we have to have. They didn't do that for Saquon. It just left. It was a little telling, in my opinion.
It'd be interesting if they go franchise tag time with Jones, give him another year or two to prove that this year was him turning the corner to becoming at least a very good NFL quarterback, or if this was a fluke year.
Yeah, they could do that.
Even franchise is going to be 28 million. 30,
it's not expensive, but at least it's only 1 year.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if they do that. I'll be stunned if I think you have a better chance of seeing Saquon get franchised than Jones. I think they want to wrap him up. I think that Jones could take it as an insult, and then he doesn't resign if he does prove that he has another year in him.
Yep.
Just a take. It doesn't mean it'll happen. I don't know Daniel Jones personally, so it doesn't mean I'm right. But you know, you never know if these guys get insulted with that kind of stuff.
It was a really good Giant season. It was a really good year for them. They weren't expected to do much. Yep. They made it to the playoffs. They won a playoff game. It's a damn good season for them. I'm going to give you my one problem, and that is they beat Minnesota, and I wish I would have heard some of the Giant fans say, you know, it's been a great year, and this is now gravy. And I didn't hear anybody say that. All I heard was, oh, maybe this is our chance to go back to the Super Bowl. They got to just take a step back. I heard it. I heard it a couple of times, a couple of different people saying this could be a magical run. I think that was way, way off base. But they're gone. They're done. Any other closing pieces on the New York Giants, guys?
Nah, for me, it was the Evan Neal thing. I still think they need a right tackle.
I did the same stupid thing as Darren taking the Giants last week.
Freaking moron! I've been telling you that they've been a fluky a little all year. I can't believe I did it. Only bet I lost all weekend.
I took them almost hoping for the Jaguars type of backdoor cover,
which is what I predicted in the other game.
Which I think is a good segue.
I actually went the other way. Not only did I take them with the regular line, but I took Philly with the revised line of -13.5 in case it was a blowout, and it was.
Well, you just take the favorites, and you're done.
One of the few bets I actually hit.
10 okay, for so, 10 on favorites for Geno.
So the other Saturday game, Kansas City beat Jacksonville 27-20. KC gets the win despite Mahomes suffering what they're now saying is a high ankle sprain. It was late in the first half. He finished with 195 yards passing and two touchdowns. Chad Henne came in as a backup. He had a 98-yard drive, which ended with a touchdown pass to Kelsey. Kelsey ended with 14 catches for 98 yards and two touchdowns. Look, the Jags gave him a scare. But in the end, the better team just won. I think a big play with them was the Agnew fumble with about 5.5 minutes to go. That I think once he fumbled that ball, it kind of cemented in a lot of people's heads, okay, Kansas City's just going to win this game now. They wound up getting the win. Mahomes looks like he's going to play this week. They're saying at this moment that he should be okay. I have no idea what his mobility is going to be like, but we'll see come Sunday. Kev, Kansas City, Jacksonville.
Yeah, when you look, and we'll get to the Dallas game later, when you look and see what happened to Pollard when he gets rolled up on in the broken leg as opposed to Mahomes escaping with just a high ankle sprain, boy, was Mahomes lucky.
Absolutely.
That being said, like you said, the key drives, the Chad Henne coming in, 98-yard drive and 12 plays in the second quarter. That was a big one. And to me, the fourth quarter, Jacksonville scored a touchdown with about just under 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter, cut it to 20-17, and Kansas City responded, 10 plays, 75 yards for the touchdown, made it 27-17, yep. Then the Agnew fumbled. They did hold him to the punt. And then Lawrence threw the interception. Game over at that point. The other positive, if you're Kansas City, Pacheco, 12 carries for 95. The team as a whole had 30 carries for 144. So they had enough balance to help overcome the injury to Mahomes. And we'll see how he does. We'll see how he looks this week with the ankle. Darren, this is your Chiefs. What do you say?
Full participant in practice today, whatever that means. Don't know what that means, but they didn't put him on the injury list somehow. He's going to be hobbled. He's going to be playing on 1.5 legs. He's not going to be able to do the things Absolutely. That he normally can do.
Yep.
That's the one thing that scares you if you're a Chief fan. The 98-yard drive, love Andy coming out, throwing on the first play, saying, I believe in Henne, throw it. And he went out there and he did it. Thought it was really good. Chiefs struggled on kickoff returns. Agnew had a couple of big ones, which were the reason why they were down the field. Obviously, he had the big fumble on the second one, which really hurt. I thought it was an incomplete pass at first, but then they showed that, you know, the replay official in the booth never disagrees with the call on the field ever. Oh, I can see why. It's always some kind of crap. It's always some sort of thing that was interesting. But I thought it wasn't a fumble, but it was. Kelsey was unguardable. It was like Jacksonville didn't know they were going to go to him. Like, do we have to cover the tight end on this team? It was weird. And to be honest, the best wide receiver they have is Tony. He's the only one that can make plays and get separation. Smith-Schuster's nice. Tony's the best receiver. Imagine the Giants getting him playing with activity. It might have been a little bit of a different story for the G-men. I mean, when the Jags cut it to 17-10, you know, it got a little interesting for a minute, but the Chiefs always found a way just to kind of hold them off. Jalen Watson had the big pick to kind of seal it. Here's the key to the whole game. Chiefs had the ball for 35 minutes. They didn't allow a sack. They didn't turn the ball over, and they only committed 3 penalties. Jacksonville turned the ball over twice. They had double the amount of penalties. And, you know, they had the ball for 25 minutes. And, you know, the Chiefs had multiple sacks. That's really the difference in the game. The Chiefs didn't really make any errors in this game. You know Lawrence is going to be good from watching it. And to me, Peterson's the coach of the year over Dable. He won his division. I know it's a weak division. Giants finished third in their division. I think that Peterson did a nice job with a team that had the worst record in football and turned it around. So I'm going to give him the nod over Dable. I understand why people would vote for Dable. I just think Peterson did a good enough job with a team that didn't even believe in themselves till about halfway through the season. And you could see that Lawrence, and by the way, the big stat on him, had never lost a game on Saturday. In college, he never lost a game as a pro until, you know, last week. So there was always a chance. I predicted a backdoor cover on the show last week. That's exactly what happened. Got a backdoor cover. That's how I got that.
And I think the Chiefs' young secondary held up real well the whole game.
They did.
That was a big thing.
Exactly. Mahomes, the guy that got hurt was the veteran. Sneed went down the third round, the third-year player.
He's the Mahomes, 5-0 in the divisional round. In 10 home playoff games, he has 28 TDs and 3 interceptions. So Mahomes continues that dominance. And we'll get to the next game because they're going to run into Cincinnati this week. Anything on anything final on Kansas City, guys?
Nope, I think you got me.
Okay. All right, moving to Sunday. Cincinnati beats Buffalo 27-10. Another game. Cincinnati's in control basically from the start. Buffalo is never in this game. They're down 14-0 in the first quarter, 17-7 at the half, 24-10 after three. Cincinnati had 172 yards rushing to Buffalo's 63. Burrow was good. Mixon was good. Chase was good. Josh Allen looked off. He's looked off for about 4 or 5 games at this point. He looked off. He was 25 for 42 for 265 yards. He didn't pass for a touchdown. He had one interception. We'll see if, as we start this offseason for the Bills, if something comes out, if there's an injury. There could be an injury with Allen that he's just playing with. That's what he does, but at the same time, we don't know how much it really hindered them. Buffalo home again. Cincinnati moves on. Kev?
Yeah, well, if you remember, it was against the Jets that Allen originally hurt the elbow, and you just wonder if it was still lingering. I thought, like you said, since he had the 2 touchdowns in the first 2 drives, Buffalo held him the third time. Buffalo came down, scored the touchdown, made it 14-7. It was 17-7 at halftime. But I think even at that point, Buffalo had totally abandoned the run. They have a tendency to do that. The running backs combined 11 carries, 37 yards. That's just not enough production there. Buffalo early third quarter did kick the field goal, 17-10, and you're thinking you're home, snowy, everything else. Maybe this is their chance to come up with a defensive stop. And since he responded, 12 plays, 75 yards for the touchdown. Game was basically over at that point. Mixon, big game, 20 carries for 105. P. Ryan helping the salt of the way later with some big tough yards. Chase and Hurst both with 5 catches and a touchdown. Just good balance throughout that lineup. Sets up what should be, well, actually, both games are going to be great, but since he and at Kansas City. Thankfully, it's not a neutral site game.
Very thankfully.
Thankfully, somebody has a home game that day. Darren?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, since he comes down the field, scores right away, like it was not a problem at all. Burrow to Chase. And you know, I know Jefferson had an amazing year and he is awesome. I still think Chase is the most dominant receiver when he's on his game. I think that when he's healthy, I think Chase is unguardable. He's just that strong. Jefferson's long, and he makes great catches, and he's great, and I'm not taking anything away from him. Just Chase is just so strong. On the second touchdown, that hit Hurst on the 3rd and 7, go up 14-0. Then Buffalo comes down the field. They score that touchdown, and then Josh Allen starts woofing with the defense. Shut the hell up. You're down 7 points. Don't motivate these guys. Shut up. You scored your touchdown. Be a professional quarterback now. Stop being an idiot. They come back down, and I thought the key was they came down and scored a field goal. Go up 17-7 and answered the touchdown. I thought it was huge to go into the locker room up 10. You know, Buffalo, you know, they got inside the 10, couldn't punch it in since he scored again. You know, like you said, Mixon had a huge game. The key to this game was simple. Cincinnati gave up 1 sack. Everybody was worried about that O-line. O-line gave up 1 sack and dominated in the running game. Buffalo also only gave up 1 sack, but they had eight penalties compared to 2, and I think that was a big factor on it as well. Cincinnati's better than Buffalo. I don't even know what else I have to say. I thought they would have beaten them that night on that Monday night. I thought they were going to win the other day. I told you guys, I bet a money line. I thought they were going to win the game before it started. I saw the snow. I was like, Cincinnati plays in the snow too. What's the big deal? Everyone's going, oh, it's snow. It's got to be Buffalo. Now, there's no wind. when there's no wind, who cares about snow? Snow's bad when it's blizzard conditions, not when it's when there's 3 to 7 mile an hour winds out there. You know, I just Cincinnati's really, really good, and that's what you take from it. They got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but Joe Cool always looks calm and collected out there, and he looked great again, I thought.
I got drawn into the Buffalo talk during the week. I took them. That was a game that was the game I really wanted back because after hearing you and Kev both take Cincinnati, I started really thinking about Cincinnati, and I kind of got drawn back into Buffalo. They're going to do this, and Cincinnati's moving on. In the late game Sunday, which turned out to be the best of the four games, San Francisco beats Dallas 19-12. It's a nip-and-tuck game the whole time. Brock Purdy managed a good game. The Niners had back-to-back long drives in the second half, which kind of sealed a lot of stuff in. Didn't give Dallas a lot of possessions to try to get back into the game once they had a lead. San Francisco wound up getting 2 interceptions. Big key to the game has got to be the Pollard injury. I mean, I'm not saying it took the life out of Dallas, but they really became limited on what they could do. Pollard is so integral to what they're doing. Dak was good, but he wasn't great. He was 23 of 37. He had 206 yards. He had a touchdown. He had 2 interceptions. Kev, let's start it off because this is the best game of the four.
I hate to disagree with you. Dak was not good. Dak was bad.
He was great.
I didn't think he was good. I don't even think he was good. He threw 2 interceptions that shouldn't be thrown by a guy in the league as long as he is.
Like I said, when Purdy outplays him in a big spot there, San Fran kept with the running game. It's nice having McCaffrey and Mitchell both playing. Elliott just doesn't look like he's got much left in the tank, unfortunately. And when Pollard went out injured, that affected that. This was a game until the end, and Dallas and McCarthy screwed up big time down at the end of the game. Before they had a punt with outside of 2 minutes left, the play ended with about 2:47 left. You've got to hustle the punt team out there. Dallas took their damn time getting the punt team out there. They punted, and San Fran had the ball back with 2:05 left. Dallas had all 3 timeouts. Either A, take the timeout before the punt, or B, get that punt team out there so that you try to get as many plays run before the 2-minute warning. I think that cost them way too much time. This way, first down. With only 2:05 left, it opens up that you could run or pass. San Fran got the quick pass, got down to 2 minutes. Eventually, they did stop him, forced him to punt. They forced him to use a couple of timeouts.
And if it wasn't for bounds, they shouldn't even gotten the ball.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for Mitchell running out of bounds, they would have had the ball back with about 15 seconds left. That being said, they still had the ball with a minute left. And then Dalton Schultz with 2 of the worst plays I've ever seen by a receiver. The first one, he catches the ball on the sidelines, lets the defensive player push him backwards and out of bounds, not knowing the rule, I guess, apparently that forward progress stopped in bounds, clock keeps running. That cost Dallas about 15 seconds. And then later on, pass to the sideline, Schultz nonchalantly, maybe I'm playing college. He got 1 foot down and
gotta get both feet down.
Plain stepped out of bounds. Cost him another 10 yards there. You figure between 15 or 20 seconds, that catch, maybe they're able to get 1 more 10-yard completion. Now you're at midfield where you have a legitimate Hail Mary shot rather than whatever the hell play McCarthy tried to draw up.
It was the funnest play of the weekend, but nothing happened.
And Ezekiel Elliott's last play is a Cowboy possibly? He was at center. Yeah, San Fran deserved to win that game. They played Dallas overall. It was a bruising game, big battle. But I think Dallas and McCarthy just totally screwed up the end of the game there. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, this was the defensive struggle. I thought both of Dak's interceptions were awful, actually. Second one in particular, it's like, what are you throwing into this little tight window? You're moving the ball down the field. Listen, Dallas held McCaffrey and Debo in check. I mean, it was Mitchell and Kittle, and they made this huge deal about Kittle's catch. The ball hit him in the hands. He juggled it. It wasn't like he did something amazing where he did an acrobatic play. Ball hit him in the hands. He couldn't grab it. It was like watching the law. What was that movie with Robin Williams, The Best of Times, where he's trying to catch it and he pins it against. I mean, I know they want to brag about the catch. Watch the play. Ball hit him in the hands. Purdy threw it perfectly. I'm excited that he caught it, but wow, they made it seem like he made this exceptional play. Ball hit him in the freaking hands. That's what you're supposed to do. Yeah, Dalton Schultz was awful down the stretch. The other thing that happened, I mean, and they didn't rush the kicking team out, the punt team out, like you said, Kev, which was really dumb. But also, they delayed a little bit. So now San Francisco gets the delay coming on the field with their team, and the umpire stands right behind the center so nobody can snap the damn ball. So it's like, if you hurry up and rush it, they know they have to send out their punt team. But when you leave your offense out there for a second, like a couple of idiots, now you have to wait. So even though they had that punt team out there, were probably about 2:24, San Francisco still had time to adjust and send out their receiving team, and they didn't have to run out there. It was just so silly the way they played it. It was the only game that was within 10 points going into the fourth quarter, though. Really good game. The Ezekiel Elliott play looked interesting. Why not make him center? Because he's going to be ineligible. He's not going to be eligible, but he can catch the laterals. They throw it to Terman. He gets tackled right away. So we have no idea what would have happened. But they steamrolled him. They ran him over so quick. I don't know if he would have gotten up anyway. Kev?
I really thought when they started splitting the linemen out wide, I thought they were going to try to set up basically screen right there. One on each side. See where you maybe have a number. Throw the screen pass to a receiver. Get a couple blockers, then have Veli come back around behind and maybe do something that way.
Would have made more sense to do a little hook and ladder. They didn't even think of it.
Rather than throwing the 15 yards down the middle to what's his name?
I mean, you know, it was funny. Even the Niners' best drive of the game, they got a defensive holding call on a 3rd and 8 that helped. I mean, nobody really moved the ball well. If that San Francisco team comes to play against Philly, they won't win. But I don't know. I mean, Debo didn't do anything. McCaffrey was limited. It was Kittle and it was Mitchell that were the stars this week. They got him through. And we're talking about 51 yards rushing from Mitchell. Kittle was 5 for 95. I mean, so that's really the way it played. I think San Francisco is better. I think the better team won. And I think we have a better matchup this weekend. I think we have two really good matchups this weekend, which is nice to see. G?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think all four teams are really good teams. I think if you were going to look at these teams as we were going through the playoffs, these are probably the best two teams in each division, in each conference. And next week should be really, really good. It's going to be a good day of football. You're going to get two good games, especially if Mahomes can give you 65 to 70% of what he normally does. I think you're going to have two really good games. We'll get to some picks later on with the NFL. Let's talk a little baseball. Couple of trades, couple of transactions we'll get to, but the big thing that happened this week, the Hall of Fame vote came out, and Scott Rowland got elected with 76.3% of the votes. Just to give you a little information, Rowland had 17 seasons. He had 281. He had 2,077 hits. He had 316 home runs, 8 gold gloves, 7 All-Star games. He was a Rookie of the Year in 1997. And yet, I don't know how the hell he got into the Hall of Fame. I look at the list, the Hall of Fame third baseman. There's 17 others in the Hall. And now when we talk about the great third baseman in the Hall of Fame, along with names like Boggs and Brett and Eddie Matthews and Chipper Jones and Molitor and Brooks Robinson and Mike Schmidt, we have to now say the name Scott Rowland. I was outraged. I can't believe he got in it's almost like the writers decided, hey, let's put somebody in. We got nobody else, so let's put him in. It's crazy. The Hall of Fame keeps getting watered down. I don't know what to do with these guys, but this was horrible. Kev, what do you think?
Watching Scott Rolen play, I never thought Hall of Famer.
Never. Not once.
You look at his 20s, from the ages of 22 to 29, when he was relatively healthy. He put up real nice years for about 7 or 8 years. But once he turned 30, he only played another 8 years. He retired at 37. You only have one more year playing over 140 games. This guy was always hurt. Nice bat when he was available. When you look at the defensive stats, they say he's maybe the third best defensive third baseman behind Brooks Robinson and somehow Adrian Beltre.
I don't see
as Yankee fans growing up, I mean, how can you not have Greg Nettles in the conversation? I just don't see Scott Rolen as a Hall of Fame player. I'm sorry. 2,077 career hits, 281 lifetime batting average, 316 home runs. Does not scream Hall of Famer to me.
Not one time in 17 seasons when he was playing did I say, oh, you know him, he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Not once. Darren?
Wow. To me, the worst Hall of Famer I think I've seen outside of Red Shanings, and I never saw him play just that. I mean, this is a guy that had 2 years where he hit over 300. This is a guy that had two other years hitting over 295, but 2 years over 300. He had 2 years of 30 homers. He had 4 years of 100 ribbies. He had 2 years of 100 runs. Never once did I say, wow, he's the best third baseman in baseball, let alone a freaking Hall of Famer. Never even thought he was the best third baseman in baseball. Always thought he was overrated. Lifetime 281 hitter. Now, I'm just going to compare him to somebody that I think should be a Hall of Famer that isn't, and his stats aren't amazing. But I'm talking about a guy that hit Jeff Kent is my guy.
Yep.
Hit 290, 377 homers, won an MVP, was a butcher in the field. I'm not going to take that away from him. Had 1,518 ribbies, 2,461 hits, scored 1,300 runs. He hit 276 in the postseason and hit homers, unlike Rolen, who hit 200 in his postseason opportunity. I know Rolen was an 8-time Gold Glove. If you want to say that was the reason you like him, the Gold Glove Award is the most handed down, repeated award of all time. The same guy wins it every freaking year. This guy is not a Hall of Famer. Todd Helton, to me, has a better resume. I know he played in Coors, so I knock it down. I wouldn't make him a Hall of Famer either. I'm just saying that Jeff Kent was the only guy in that ballot outside of the A-Rod, Manny stuff that you could have voted for. I mean, to me, Jeff, and this is Jeff Kent's last year on the ballot, so he's done. I just don't get Scott Rolen as an all. I mean, I didn't think Andrew Jones is an all-star, and I certainly don't think Billy Wagner was Hall of Famer. I'm sorry, I don't think Billy Wagner was a Hall of Famer. Obviously not Andrew Jones, certainly not Todd Helton, and I don't know if I've had Scott Rolen ahead of those three. So. Just a bad job. I mean, what are you doing? Well, you like the guy? He was nice to you when you did an interview? What the hell? Enough of the crap. This is supposed to be the special players. You go to that's – I've been to three of the four Hall of Fames. Never been to football, okay? I've been to the other three. I've been to hockey, which is in the basement of a freaking hotel in Toronto. And, you know, the thing is, I don't know enough about the history of hockey. So when they show guys from the 30s, I don't even know who they're talking about. You know, basketball, yeah, shoot the balls at Springfield, whatever. No big deal either way. But then you get to baseball, and it's like a shrine. And now you're putting in Scott freaking Rolen. What are you freaking kidding me? Disgraceful. Downright disgraceful. G? You there, G?
I can't
hear you, bud.
The bigger problem I have with this is there are so many other people that I could name that are more deserving of getting in than he is. And, you know, I'm going to be the Homer Yankee fan and tell you, if he got in Scott Rolen, there's no reason why Don Mattingly should not be in this Hall of Fame. I'm sorry.
Of course not.
Don Mattingly
he actually dominated baseball for 5 years.
He dominated baseball for five seasons. Okay. Scott Rolen didn't dominate baseball for one season in any particular category. It's atrocious. It really is. All right.
It's the Don Sutton of freaking position players.
Yeah.
Not even Don Sutton.
No, Don Sutton won 20 games a few times.
Sutton at least was consistently good.
On good teams, was hurt too much. Consistently good.
Huh?
I said on good teams, but he was consistently good. He was the 102 on every one of those teams. Now you're right. He's better than Scott Rolen.
MVP votes. MVP vote. Scott Rolen 1 year finished fourth in voting.
Jeff Kent won one.
Finished in the top 10. Huh?
Jeff Kent won one.
Jeff Kent won one, finished in the top 10 three other times.
Absolutely.
Eight 100 RBI seasons. Like you say, you put up the other numbers. He was a far better player than Scott Rolen.
And you thought he was really good when he was playing. You thought he was a prick and he was really good. Jake.
All right. So we had a couple of other minor trades going on this week. The Twins traded Luis Arraez to the Marlins for Pablo Lopez. With the trade, it means Jazz Chisholm's going to go and play center field, a position he's never played before. The Marlins get a 300 hitter. The Red Sox, in desperate moves, traded for Alberto Mondesi to play shortstop.
Gives him speed.
And the other,
if he comes back healthy, anyway.
If he plays, if he's actually on the field. And the other minor trade was the Twins traded for Michael Taylor for a couple of minor leaguers. The other news around baseball is with the Chicago White Sox and Mike Clevenger. There's all sorts of accusations and allegations about domestic abuse and child abuse, and we will see where that takes him. That'll be a big blow to Chicago's pitchers if he's not in the on the roster as we start spring training, but we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, what we saw with Trevor Bauer, I mean, there's a chance that he won't be. There's a good chance. If there's anything substantiated by that.
Correct. Any other baseball news from you guys?
No, I think that covers it, G. It's just disappointed that the Hall of Fame has a Scott Rolen wing.
Yes, agreed. Kev, let's talk some NBA.
Not much. I know Darren said he had a couple of points.
Oh, you want me to go? Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have 1 point. It's Shannon freaking Sharp. All right? Enough of Shannon freaking Sharp kissing LeBron James's ass all over the place. So LeBron James gets mad at a couple fans in Indiana that are insulting him. He gets them thrown out of the game. But Shannon Sharp can walk onto the court and challenge the Memphis Grizzlies, and LeBron says, that's my guy. The hypocrisy of the NBA is mind-numbing. It is downright ridiculous. Listen, Shannon Sharp, Hall of Fame tight end for the Broncos, great player. He was on the NFL pregame shows. He does a show now with Skip Bayless where he couldn't show up the day after DeMar Hamlin because he was too distraught and upset for a guy he probably never met in his life. But that's beside the point. Maybe he did. Maybe they were close. Maybe I'm exaggerating it. But now you're going to every Laker game. And I don't watch their show, so I'm not going to pretend that I do. But I work for a living, so I can't catch these guys at 11 o'clock in the morning. But for you to think that you have the right to go onto an NBA court, get out of here. Stay the hell out of the NBA court. Go and be there as a fan. I know LeBron's your boy. I know you guys love each other. Great. Be supportive of each other. But you shouldn't be challenging John Morant's dad to an argument or a battle in half the Grizzlies team because you're a child and because they're bullying your boy and beating him. Get over it. Enough with the Shannon Sharp crap. You're a joke. G?
A couple of other things going on in the NBA. They're saying that Durant could be back before the All-Star break. We'll see what happens with him. And
they said at least 2 more weeks.
Yeah, and in other news, the Lakers made a trade this past week. They got Rui Hachimura from Washington for Kendrick Nunn and 3 second-round picks. I don't see that being a big trade, but, you know.
The kid can shoot. He can stretch and shoot. It's another shooter for LeBron to dish to when he drives. He's averaging, what, I think 12 or 13 a night. He wasn't playing bad.
Okay. Kev,
I think it's easier when you look at the NBA draft. It's easier to list the teams that keep their own second round pick.
Yeah, all they do is trade.
They trade those second round picks like nothing.
And now with the G League, it doesn't even really matter.
No.
They just take whoever they want, free agent, second round pick. They throw them in the G League team and they see what they got.
Yep.
Kev, want to do a top five?
Sure. My top five, I kept them up there even though they've lost the last two games. They've been battling a little bit of injury problems. Williams and Smart have been out. Tatum's been a little banged up recently. They're still monitoring Horford. He's not necessarily playing back-to-back nights. But I've got Boston still number one. They won 9 in a row before they lost the 2. What's interesting is they're 13-7 in the last 20. Still good enough for the best record in the league. Somehow they've got 3 losses in that stretch to the Orlando Magic.
It's a feisty squad.
Just doesn't make sense. Number two, they've crawled within a half game of Denver, of Boston. It's the Denver Nuggets. They're 9-1 in the last 10, second best record in the league. Third, another hot team, Philadelphia. They're rating 2 in their last 10, winners of 5 in a row. They're in a nip and tuck game with the Nets as we speak. 4, I've got Milwaukee, and 5, I dropped them down from 2 last week. They've lost 3 in a row to start the road trip. It's the aforementioned Memphis Grizzlies. Right on the outside, Brooklyn, after suffering a couple of games without KD, they've seemed to rebound it a bit. They've got Kyrie playing real well. They won 2 in a row going into tonight. And Sacramento and Miami have got right there as well. Darren?
Yeah, well, I have Boston also, despite the two in a row losing. So our first three look exactly the same because they're Boston, Denver, and Philly for the same reasons. I have Memphis down at 4 at the 7-3 mark in the last 10. They got blown out by Sac the other night, but, I think they'll start to turn around a little bit. And I put Sac at the 5. They average 120 points a game. I mean, you got to love the NBA. Defense is not exactly a requirement. I have Milwaukee and Miami just off the pace. Jake?
This is the first time all season I don't have Boston 1. I have Denver 1 and Boston 2. I have Memphis at 3, Philly at 4, and I'm keeping Brooklyn at the 5 at the moment, but Sacramento's just looking really good right now. So we'll see what happens with that. Darren, yeah, another point?
Well, like Darren was saying, the lack of defense. The Milwaukee Bucks gave up 130 Monday night to Detroit and still won by 20.
Blew them out.
The 150, and we made the point last week, 150 used to be the total back in the Nick Glory days.
Exactly.
Unbelievable the difference.
Let's go to the NHL. Any NHL points?
I know Kev had a couple of things. I had a point, but I want to start with you, Kev.
Yeah, I was looking at last week I looked a little closer at the locals for the NBA. I was taking a closer look at the locals for the NHL. The Devils, they have the second best record in hockey, only behind Boston. It's really been a tale of like three seasons for the Devils already. They started off 21-4-1, keeping right pace with the Bruins. They had a 13-game winning streak in there. Then struggled to go 3-8-2 in the next 13, but the last 8, they've gone 7-0-1. As a team, they have a goal differential of plus 41, which is third best in the league. They're giving up the second fewest goals. Yeah, Darren.
They're 18-2-2 on the road. It's unfreaking believable. Yep. They're 18-2-2 on the road. That's what stands out to me about the Devils. They're a little above 500 at home. They're 18-2-2 on the road. I think that record's ridiculous. Sorry, Kev.
No, that's great. Jack Hughes is playing real well, 30 goals, 30 assists, 60 points. Jesper Bratt, 18-30 for 48 points. They've got a couple of guys. They've got guys like Thomas Tatar, Ryan Graves, Jonas Siegenthaler, all with well over plus 20, plus minus. Just unbelievable. They've got a real deep team, and their goalie, Vanacek, is 25-2 with a 2.3 goals against. 6th best in the league, and a 916 save percentage. They're playing real well. Got over that little bit of a stretch there in those 13 games, but doing a real good job. And like I said, second best record in hockey, tied with Carolina. Any other Devil points?
No, for me, I mean, just really the road record's ridiculous. And, yeah. Just figuring out who is going to be the go-to goalie in the playoffs because they've had two guys playing well. And Dougie Hamilton has really been a guy that finds a way to make big plays in close games. He's a veteran that they brought in, and I think he's been really a difference maker for the Devil Squad.
And he's got 42 points in 47 games. He's playing real well.
He's good, man.
Yeah. Then we turn to the Rangers. Hate to say, I'll give them props. They are third in the Metropolitan. On December 3rd, they were middle along, 11-10-5, not doing much. And all of a sudden, for the last almost 2 months, they've got 15-4-2. They've really turned it around. They are third in the division. Again, you want to be just make the playoffs. You never know what happens.
You got the goalie that can keep you in it.
And with Shesterkin, he is eighth in the league in goals against at 244, 21-8-6. Getting contributions from Panarin, from Zibanejad. I knew I screwed up that pronunciation.
It's not bad. Go ahead.
Zibanejad. It's close enough. You just added an extra syllable.
Yep. Adam Fox, the other defenseman who can score 10 goals.
Local Long Island guy.
Plus 22. Good squad, deep squad, and they have really played well the last 2 months.
Yeah, they have a goalie that can win any series for them. When he's on, he's as good, if not the best, in the league. You know, they play fast. I mean, Chris Kreider is the veteran guy. Remember when he was the young rook skating all over the place? He's the veteran guy. But you know what? He's still quick. And they are a team to be reckoned with, to be perfectly honest. They are not a team anybody will want to face. I know Boston is a world beater. Nobody else in the East scares you. If you can avoid the if you can avoid being the eighth seed, you take a shot at with everybody else.
Yeah,
Jake.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the way they're playing right now, that they can beat anybody, especially in a short series. I think they can probably beat anybody except Boston at the moment, who's just completely on fire. Still, they've been on fire from day one, and they haven't looked back. My top five, I have Boston one. Tampa Bay 2, Carolina.
We didn't even talk about the Islanders yet, G. No, you got to wait.
Carolina 3. Got points. Seattle 4, the Devils 5, and I have the Rangers coming in at 6.
Go ahead. Finish up on the Islanders.
He wants to skip the Islanders.
Neither one of you want to talk about it, but go ahead.
Well, we have a goalie that could win a series, too. We just don't have the rest of the team. Sorokin and Shesterkin have identical stats, 2.44 goals against for both.
Sorokin's
save percentage is .922. The difference is Sorokin is 15-16-4. I was talking to a coworker of mine. I work with a lot of Canadians. He's a big Toronto fan. And we were talking after the Maple Leafs beat the Islanders the other night. And I went back and looked. He was talking about the fact that Toronto seems to they seem to have had a lot of turnover. He's watching the game, not sure who these guys are. I started going back, and I said, we know the Islanders have seemed to have had the same team the last 3 or 4 years. And I went back and looked at those 2 years in a row with the Eastern Conference Finals. They've got 14 of the 18 skaters still basically the same. They need a turnover. They need something to change. This is an old roster. You've got – and I hate to – put them out there because I love the line, but Clutterbuck's 35, Cizikas is 30,
Matt Martin
is 33, other guys over 30, Brock Nelson, Pajot, Palmieri, Mayfield, Lee, Bailey, Varlamov. There's too many 30-plus guys for a team that's not that good. And what I'm afraid of is, you know, you start to see a little bit of Holmstrom sprinkled in there. You've seen Oliver Wahlstrom get sprinkled in there. And I'm just afraid that these are first-round draft picks. And I'm afraid they're going to go the same way as guys like Kiefer Bellows and Michael Dalcali and Josh Hosang, first-rounders who I don't think ever got a real fair shake to make a contribution. And maybe they don't play well. Maybe they're not good. But they were first-round picks for a reason. Unfortunately, the last 3 years, the Islanders have not had a first-round pick since 2019. So not only are they old, they don't have the young players to replenish. And the young players they do, I don't think they get a fair chance. And I think for them to turn this around, they were 15-8 in late November. They've gone 8-13-5 since. They are 1-6-3 in the last 10. They've lost 5 in a row. Not playing well. Their leading scorer, Barzell and Nelson, they've got 42 points each, less than a point a game. Gino is my fellow Islander fan. I think you agree. They need something to shake the to shake this up. They need to make some trades, get rid of some of these older guys.
Listen, time for a change. They got the right GM to do it. We'll see what happens. I'm thinking the same thing you are, and I have a feeling it's going to be a very active trade deadline as we're getting close to it.
For me, the Islanders have always been a team of grit, okay? I mean, the two teams that made it to the conference final and lost to the juggernaut that was Tampa were really gritty squads. They just played really, really hard. They still do, but now they're a step slower, and they're just a little long in the tooth, and they just don't have that guy you can count on to score. You can't just sit there and put Anders Lee in front of the net and hope that he's going to deflect 25 to 30 goals in anymore. It's time to get a couple of other guys involved, and they're not doing it. You know, like you said, just got to get the youth in there playing. You got to get some speed on the ice. Even the, you lost again to Ottawa tonight. Not a good squad. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's time to trade and get whatever assets you can get back and rebuild this team. The fan base is dying to make UBS a really great home ice arena. There's just nothing going on.
Yeah.
There's nothing to cheer for. Nobody's going. It's expensive as hell, and nobody's going to watch them. So that's the whole thing. You know, the Islander fan base has always been that way. If they're not good, I'm not driving. You know, that's just the way it works. You know, I live out here, so I experience it a lot. And we have tickets, and, you know, I'm not getting bombarded like I was a couple years back. Yeah. Just the way it works. So I think that, like you said, I think the coach is fine. I think the GM is fine. I got to give the coach a chance, but the team is just – you can't have a team of 30-somethings and expect to be really effective in the sport.
Yeah. Then you got – that was also looking at the MVP race. Connor McDavid's to lose at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not really close.
40 goals, 48 assists, 88 points. He's 15 points ahead of his teammate, Leon Draisaitl.
Draisaitl, yep.
Actually,
I hate them both.
And then for Boston, Pasternak is third in the league. He's got 37 goals, 69 points. If Boston keeps running away, does he get reward? If McDavid slows down his pace a little bit, we'll see. But Edmonton has been playing a lot better lately, and they should because they've got these two offensive juggernauts.
And yeah, the question with Edmonton will always come down to the goaltending, Kev.
Yep.
It's really going to be if they can keep the puck out of the net. They'll always put the puck in. It's going to be if they can keep the puck out.
And one old guy who still scores, Ovechkin.
He's
got 31 goals, 811 for his career. He's sixth in the league in goals right now. This makes it 17 out of 18 seasons with 30 goals. The only year he didn't was back in 2021, the shortened COVID season, when he only had 24 and 45 games. I mean, this guy has been the best goal scorer. Gretzky is the best player, but I think Ovechkin might be the best goal scorer, even though he hasn't caught Gretzky yet.
Well, he's a sniper.
Yeah.
I'll say okay, but I don't know if I agree with that.
What do you think, Mike Bossy, G?
No, I think Gretzky.
Gretzky was the best at everything. You can give him any nod, and he can win any award he wants ever. All right, G, you gave us your top five. Kev, why don't you throw yours out there?
Yep. Obviously, Boston stays number one. Dominant year, six in a row, and just clearly best team in the league. I've got the Devils at number two, Carolina at three, the Maple Leafs at four, and Winnipeg at five. Dallas, Tampa, Seattle, Edmonton right at the doorstep.
I went a little different than you. I went Boston one, Devils two, same two top, 18-2-2 on the road. I don't know if you heard that.
Yep.
Colorado three. They won six in a row. I think that they're playing great hockey right now. Nathan McKinnon's back. They're playing well. Edmonton, fourth, six in a row. Hate them, but they're playing great hockey. And I put Carolina in the five spot with Toronto just off the pace.
Okay.
All right. NHL, concluded for right now. Let's move to some college basketball.
A lot of things going on, D. Major week of upsets. Absolutely. To talk about the last 8 days, just to cover it. You know, number two Kansas that started the week, number two last week, has lost three in a row. Not to any bad team. The only one that was really bad was they lost to TCU at home, who had never won in Lawrence by 22, and it was never that close. TCU just dominated them. UCLA, the five, they lost at Arizona. You really can't crush them for that. Tough place to play at McHale, 58-52 final. Rutgers was 22 last week. They lost at Michigan State. Again, not going to get too worked up about it. You know, losing losing it at Michigan State is never a crime. Number 17, Miami, lost at Duke. Very funny to say that that's the upset, but Duke held on and won by two. Number 14, TCU, despite beating the crap out of Kansas, lost to West Virginia, the team that was winless in the league, one of the two teams that was. But the Big 10, I'm sorry, the Big 10, the Big 12, it's not even close. They are so far the dominant conference in college basketball this year. You've seen nothing like it. All 10 teams are really, really good teams. Even Texas Tech, who's still winless in the league. They lost to West Virginia. UConn has been on a downward spiral. They were 15 last week. They lost at Seton Hall. They lost again at home tonight to Xavier, who's good. But nonetheless, speaking of Xavier, the 8 seed last week, they lost at DePaul. DePaul's not very good. They lost that game anyway. Providence lost at Marquette. Not a big deal. Gonzaga, the 6th team in the country, lost at home to Loyola Marymount. Now, Loyola Marymount also has a win over Wake this year. Loyola is a good team. I mean, not the team that should break your 75-game home winning streak, but just tells you that it's not your uncle's Gonzaga squad. This team's a little bit beatable, despite the fact that Gino loves Jude Timmy and talks about his stats on a weekly basis. Iowa State lost at Oklahoma State. Then they came back and won against Kansas State last night in a great game.
Yeah.
And number one, Houston, loses at home to Temple.
Temple.
By 1 point. Here's why you lose. Temple goes 20 for 22 from the line. Houston goes 11 for 21. Still, Houston has two shots at the buzzer and can't get either one to fall. They fall by a point. Think they were looking ahead to the UCF matchup that they won tonight, because UCF would be the best team that they would probably have to face outside of Memphis in league. But they lost to Temple, who's also beaten Rutgers. Temple's not an awful team, and they've beaten Nova. And then they've lost to teams like Wagner. So you don't know what Temple is. It's just like, it's a topsy-turvy college basketball year where you're going to see teams that are way below 500 in the league get into the tournament. I know you had a couple of facts, and then I want to talk about a mid-major, Kev, so I'm going to let you go, Kev.
Yeah, a couple of things. You mentioned how bad DePaul is. DePaul is so bad, Georgetown beat them.
Ended the streak, 29.
29-game losing streak snapped in the conference.
I'm glad for Patrick.
Yep. you mentioned mid-majors. Small college guy, Detroit Mercy's Antoine Davis.
Yep.
Becomes the number two scorer in college basketball history. He's got 3,274 points, probably a couple more. He's probably played a game or two since then. Number one, he's still about 400 points behind Pistol Pete Maravich.
Now, they played a lot less games back then.
Two things. Pistol Pete only played 3 years.
Yep.
Davis has played four. Pistol Pete did not have a three-point line. In his 3 years, he averaged 44.2 points per game for LSU.
That is just for his old man Press, who never took him out.
Yeah. And my other point, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, Mike Bray, has announced he's retiring after the year. All-time winning coach in Notre Dame history. You know, they had Digger Phelps for a long time. And I drew a total blank. I forgot about the McLeod years when they were just awful.
Oh, I didn't. They were awful.
Yeah, I know you were happy. Well, you don't hate Notre Dame basketball as much as football.
No, listen, I didn't hate Digger Phelps, and I don't hate Mike Bray. I didn't hate John McLeod either. I liked David Rivers when he was the point guard. I like a lot of things about Notre Dame, but unfortunately, Mike Bray's not going to go out a winner. This team isn't very good. They're not making the tournament, but unless they win the ACC tournament.
But Bray's done his fair share of getting into the tournament. He's had a couple of Sweet 16 runs. Done a nice job out there in Notre Dame. And wanted to mention that he's retiring after the season.
Yep. 2 points I want to bring up. One's a mid-major, one's not a mid-major, but it's just an interesting local point. Fordham went into St. Bonnie's today and won. They are 16-4. Now, they've beaten nobody good, but their coach left them after the season when Jay Wright retired to go to Villanova. And Urso came in, came in. And, you know, for Fordham to be 16-4, I've never seen this. I haven't seen this since the days of when they were in the Patriot League. when they were pretty good back then, when McCarchuk was coaching. That we're talking about 30 years. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to win the A-10. They'll finish with 20 wins, and it'll be a nice story because I haven't done that in forever either. But man, it's cool to see a team like Fordham playing that well. So I was excited about that. The mid-major spotlight team tonight that could make the NCAA tournament as an at-large is Kent State. And, of course, they lost last night. But understand this. Kent State is 16-4, okay? They have an amazing backcourt. Sincere Curry being their top player, senior. He averages like 17 points a game. He averages like 5 assists, 4 rebounds, a couple of almost 2 steals. He's a really, really good player. He's a senior, knows what he's doing. And they have a kid named Malik Jacobs who averages 12 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and 3 steals a game, which is hard to do. So this team really does press you and turn you over. They play really, really hard. Unfortunately, last night they ran into Northern Illinois, who didn't miss much, and Northern Illinois beat them by 10. The Huskies are a decent team, but they're below 500, and they're above 500 in league, but definitely not the type of team that you want to lose to. Their other 3 losses. Listen to this, G, because you're going to be impressed by this. They lost by 7 at Gonzaga. They lost by 5 at Houston, and they lost by 2 at Charleston, who we talked about 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
So just know, before last night's Northern Illinois game, their only 3 losses were the teams that were ranked. Well, Charleston wasn't ranked at the time. But this is a team that shoots the ball fantastic. They shoot about 45% from the floor. They shoot about 34% from 3. They shoot 75% from the line. They force 17 turnovers a game. A lot of good things. They don't rebound well, and that's the biggest problem that they face. They defend great, but they are not a very big team, and they do not rebound well. But this is a team that right now has 4 losses. I could see them getting out of it. If they don't win their conference, I could see them getting away with 5 or 6 losses and finding their way into the tournament. This is a school that has done damage in the tournament before. You remember Stan Heath getting that team to the Final Eight, the Elite Eight, a few years back. And by a few, it's probably like 12 or 13 now. They just run into each other. So Kent State has shown the ability to be really good. The league is always solid. It's not spectacular, but it's solid. And if this is the only real, slip up, this is a team that you'll want to watch in the NCAA tournament. This is a team that I'd be stunned if you're not watching in the MAC final. Kev?
They're one of the ones that if they get to the MAC final and lose, that gives them the 5th loss. They probably have enough cushion to maybe lose one other conference game. If they start losing 2 more, then you start knocking them down. Probably not in there. They can slip up 1 more time before the conference finals, I think.
That's it. It's got to be on the they lost on the road also. Yes, they can't lose at home, and you can't lose to a team that's in the bottom half of the conference. Northern Illinois, for them, luckily, is not in the bottom half. It's just not a great team. They're like 4-3 in league. It's a middle level team. The thing about it was Kent State was up kind of early, and they just Northern Illinois kind of pulled away in the second half. So that's my little mid-major little spotlight for the week.
Yeah,
give us your top 8. What?
Yeah, if they go on the road, lose to an Akron or Toledo, I'm not sure if they played them yet on the road, but that's the type of team they can afford a loss to.
You know what? I can look it up right now. I'm not going to, because it'll take me too long to find it, but you're right.
This was one of my first weekends where I actually got to see some of the college basketball games. Kansas State really impressed me. Houston really impressed me. Tennessee impressed me. I know Houston lost, but they still impressed me pretty good. Those 3 teams, I think, really have a chance to go far. The other thing, Darren, we mentioned Kent State. The other mid-major team that probably is going to get in no matter what happens is Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, we talked about them last week. Yep,
they're ranked. Yeah.
Anyone else that you think has a chance of getting in even without winning their conference tournament, one of those mid-majors?
You know, I mean, a lot of these leagues have gotten really depleted, you know what I mean? So I don't know if there's any other. These are the three that stand out most to me. Colgate didn't do anything in the preseason. I mean, they're playing really well now in league. They might go undefeated in their league, but they didn't do enough. None of the Ivies beat enough good teams. It's another league you look at because they do have the ability. Yale's a pretty good squad. I mean, but, you know, Princeton's a really good squad. Princeton, maybe. But, you know, these are the three that stand out to me as the ones that really have a shot to get in. You know, Missouri Valley's not even as strong as it was. Drake, Indiana State, they're okay. They haven't beaten anybody. So that's where my problem is. Southern Illinois, same thing.
So we think the teams that the mid-majors that may have a shot to get in, even if they don't win, we're looking at Kent State, looking at Florida Atlantic, and who else?
College of Charleston was the first one I talked about. College of Charleston,
okay.
And honestly, it's because they all had at least a good quality win somewhere. Now, I don't count the Atlantic 10, and I don't count the Mountain West in the mid-major conversation.
Me neither.
The Mountain West will have three or four teams.
Yep.
The Atlantic 10 will probably have two, maybe three. So I don't put those teams in this conversation.
Agreed.
Those leagues are superior.
Mountain West could get five.
Oh, absolutely. They could get six almost, depending on the – I mean
– UNLV.
You know, UNLV will have to get hot. Yeah. But, yeah, but Nevada's right there. Utah State's right there. You know, obviously, New Mexico is right there. San Jose State's starting to play better. I mean, you know, San Diego State's obviously like the perennial. And they also lost last week, by the way. I didn't really touch on that one because I didn't think it was that big an upset, but they lost too. So, I mean, the only teams that are really out of it are Air Force, Wyoming, and Colorado State, really, and Fresno State. Those four, the other seven, all could do something if they, depending on it. And the league's really good, actually. The league's really good.
Look, it's early. We're not out of the month of January, and we're already spotlighting some teams we think may get in as mid-majors. So I think we're doing a hell of a job at this point.
We're trying.
Top eight.
Lead the way, Jake.
I'm going to go Purdue, Alabama, Houston, Kansas State, Texas, UCLA, Tennessee, and Arizona. Those are my eight.
Kev?
Pretty similar. I've got Purdue 1, Alabama, Houston. I've got Tennessee up to 4. I don't think there's much of a difference between Alabama and Tennessee right now. UCLA, Iowa State off the win over Kansas State last night. I got them in 6. Texas and Arizona, right on the outside, Virginia and Kansas State.
I go Alabama 1, even though they're losing right now to Mississippi State at home by 3. It was 10 before, so they're cutting it back. I have Purdue as 2. Purdue struggled with Maryland this week. Maryland's pretty good, but they struggled with them at home. They won by 3.
Yeah.
Being 7'4". Houston, I put as 3. I know they lost the game by a point. If they hit some foul shots, I think they'll get it back. I kept Kansas State at 4. I love the comeback last night. I thought that they were in trouble. They were down 10. They stormed back twice, had a chance at the end. They didn't get it done. I put Tennessee as 5. They blew out Georgia tonight, beat them by like 30. They're a bully team when they get you. I put Virginia in the top 8. I have them 6. I think Virginia's playing really well, and they're the only team in the ACC you can truly trust. Miami's good, though. Miami's the second team in that league. I have UCLA at 7. I think UCLA, I'm not going to punish them for the loss at Arizona. That's a tough place to play. And I put Iowa State in at 8. I think, well, when you look at Iowa State, they have 3 guys that are 23, 24, and 24 years old. They're a veteran squad. And same thing with Pitt tonight. I watched a little bit of them. Their average age of the starting 5 is 22.8. They have two guys that are 24 on their squad. So you have all this with the fifth year because of the COVID year. You get a lot of teams that are very young, and you have a lot of teams that are very old. I'm not saying Pitt's going to get in, but they could. And Iowa State definitely will be a factor if they do get in. It's funny. They have those old guys, and they have a freshman point guard. So it's like, they go one extreme to the other. But that's my 8.
Okay. Kev, Let's hit on a couple of miscellaneous pieces before we go to NFL picks.
Yeah, for anybody who's got insomnia, they may know that the Australian Open is going on right now. The least interesting of the four majors in tennis. But what's interesting about this one, on the women's side, I've heard of Victoria Azarenka. The other three semifinalists, I have no idea who they are. On the men's side, though, in the quarterfinals, three U.S. men made it, which for us, we all grew up in the 80s where we watched McEnroe and Connors, eventually lead into Michael Chang, Jim Courier, Pete Sampras. We were used to watching good and great Agassi American too. Tennis players. and Agassi. I forgot Agassi. Yep. I shouldn't have. He's got a career Grand Slam also. So it was nice to see three U.S. men into the quarterfinals. One of them, even though his dad was a Czech, he came – he's raised his family in the U.S. They're U.S. citizens, Sebastian Korda. And like I said, his dad Peter was a tennis player back in that same era.
And his daughter is a really good-looking golfer, Nellie Korda.
His two older sisters. Daughters,
yeah, but Nellie's the better one.
Jessica and Nellie both play on the LPGA Tour, both very good. And like you said, good-looking young ladies. Ben Shelton is a young stud there. He's 20 years old, lost in the quarterfinals to 25-year-old Tommy Paul. So Tommy Paul gets his chance here in the semifinals to face Novak Djokovic. It's nice to see some of these other players in there. Tennis has been so dominated the last 20 years by the big three, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. It's nice to see some other players in there, including some Americans. Hopefully they continue along here. Anything else?
And they even had four in the round of 16. So it's very interesting. All of them under the age of 25, so it's young and perhaps it's, perhaps Americans are starting to regain a little bit of a stranglehold on the sport. Let's see.
Yep.
Darren, any other points?
Yeah, one little thing. I just want to talk about U.S. men's soccer. I don't know if anyone's been following it because World Cup's over. So they play a friendly tonight against Serbia, which normally would mean nothing, and a lot of the guys that are the normal players wouldn't play. Big thing that happened, though, is that head coach is now temporarily not the head coach. And the reason why is because there were formal complaints about him abusing his wife 35 years ago. Apparently he kicked her. And this all stemmed from another player that was on the U.S. men's national team with him. So Berhalter kicked his wife, and the guy that was the rat, so Berhalter had to come back, was Claudio Reyna. Claudio Reyna was captain on those teams. Claudio Reyna was the best man at Berhalter's wedding. Claudio Reyna was mad that his son Gio didn't play enough in the World Cup. So he wanted to get Berhalter fired. So he brought up this whole point about him kicking his then girlfriend and then future wife to try to get him to like basically blackmail him. So Berhalter went out with it publicly. But with the world we live today, everybody's guilty until proven innocent. And he's not innocent. He kicked his wife. He said it was inexcusable. They've been married for a long time. Nothing has really happened ever since. But this is where we are. Two guys that were best friends turning on each other because you didn't play my son enough in the World Cup. You can't make this crap up, folks. This is what friendship gets you now. This is where we are as friends going forward. I just don't get it. U.S. plays Serbia tonight. Again, this is going to be mostly the young kids and a few of the real veterans that don't get to play a lot during the World Cup time, like the Kellen Acostas and stuff like that, Areola, guys like that don't get a ton of playing time or just come in as subs if you'll like to watch the soccer against Serbia in a friendly. But I just thought the whole Berhalter thing was really interesting because yes. It's like the kind of drama you can't make up. It's like, wow, somebody's going to blow the whistle and he's got to get him fired. And it was like his best friend that was the best man at his wedding. Whatever. Can't make it up. Gee, that was my little point on the day.
All right. We go to the conference championship games. We got two. There's two. There's an AFC, NFC. The AFC game is Cincinnati -1. over under of 47.5. The second game is that we're going to talk about. We'll give our picks for is the NFC. It's Philadelphia -2.5 versus San Francisco, over under of 46.5. Kev, you at 6-4 at this moment have the honors over us. Let's start it off.
Chiefs Bengals. The injury to Patrick Mahomes will limit him. He will not be as mobile as he normally is. The off-schedule throws he makes may not be as effective. Cincy's O-line sure looked like it was not missing three starters. It's going to be an interesting test for Kansas City's young defensive backs going against Chase and Higgins, etc. Cincy's won 3 in a row against Kansas City. The spread is only 1. I'm going to take Cincinnati -1 and over 47.5. I see this maybe a 28-24 type game in favor of Cincinnati. Darren?
All right. Well, again, the injury to Mahomes definitely hurts. I don't think that the Bengal offensive line is going to get away with what they got away with last week with steamrolling and running it down the Chiefs' throats like they did against Buffalo. I think the Chiefs will react a little bit better against the run and force them to throw, which will force that O-line to be in pass protection a little bit more. Even though a couple of those guys might play, they won't be 100%. So we're going to see what happens. I think because they're writing them off and because Mahomes has never been an underdog at home in a or underdog in any playoff game, whether home or away, and the disrespect that the Chiefs will feel, I think the Chiefs are going to find a way to win this game. I think the Chiefs are going to win this game 31-21. I like the over as well. I think that it'll be a very competitive game, but I think Mahomes is going to do something special. I don't know why. I just think he is. Jake?
So, my gut tells me Cincinnati's going to play really well in this game and Kansas City's going to have to pull one out. But I think Kansas City can pull one out. Now, here's the catch for Gino, and that is preseason bets. I had 2 bets that were placed. One was Philadelphia and the Chargers to make the Super Bowl. The other one was Philadelphia and Kansas City to make the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia plus Kansas City parlay is +620. I do not hedge bets ever. So, therefore, my picks are definitely going to be Philadelphia and Kansas City. I'm taking Kansas City. I like that I'm getting a point at home. I'm taking Kansas City +1. I'm going to just give it to you, Kev, before you even start. I love Philly. Philly's my Super Bowl winner prediction from the preseason. It's -2.5 at home. It's less than a field goal. San Francisco is going to come in and play really well. I don't have a doubt about it. I think it's close. I think it goes over 46. I think it's like 30-27. I think Philadelphia pulls it out. I didn't get to my over. I also like the over in the Kansas City game as well. But my NFC pick is Philadelphia -2.5. Kev?
I agree with you, G. I think if Philly, when Philly is right, they are the best team. I think this is going to be the game where Brock Purdy is going to see that pass rush and maybe the first time that Purdy has a little bit of a struggle. He hasn't had one yet in 8 games.
Not yet.
It's been a great run for Purdy. San Fran still has all the weapons. They're a gritty team. They're going to keep this close, no doubt about it. But I think Philly pulls it out, signs of 21-17, so I'll take the under.
Okay.
Weather could be a factor in both games, by the way. 28 and snowy in Kansas City, 50 and rainy in Philly. So it won't be cold, but it will be rainy. So we're going to see what happens on that. This is going to be a competitive game. I like San Francisco. I think San Francisco finds the way to win this game by a touchdown. I think San Francisco wins this game 24-17. So just like you guys, I'm going under. San Francisco's defense is not like this elite defense. They're the best defense in the league, but it's not a great defensive league right now. So it's not like that. I think their corners are going to be fantastic. But I don't think Philly's going to be able to run the ball like they did last week. And I don't think that Hurts can outflank Warner or Greenlaw like he can other linebackers in the league. I think that they're going to be able to make him have to turn it up and risk getting hit a little bit. And he's going to have to beat him with his arm. And like I've said all year, he can't do it. So I'm going to say San Francisco wins this game 24-17.
Okay, so just to recap, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Gino, Kevin both have Philadelphia, Darren, San Francisco. Darren and Kevin like the under 46.5. Gino likes the over 46.5. And in the AFC, Gino and Darren like Kansas City. Kevin likes Cincinnati. We all like the over of 47.5.
In the snow.
That is the conference championship picks.
Take the under. Take the under.
Yeah, do whatever you can to bet against us in that over-under in the Kansas City Cincy game.
Three games left to this weekend, and then the big game coming up. Guys, anything else?
I think I'm pretty well covered. I don't know about you.
I think we've touched on almost every major sport.
John Rahm had a minus 27 in golf over the weekend, but I didn't get into that one today.
By the way, I looked into the parlay money line of Philadelphia and Kansas City, and it is plus 212 right now. So my plus 620 to start the year is turning out to be a hell of a bet at the moment. We'll see if it actually comes out.
I can throw one more sport. Skiing. Mikaela Shiffrin breaks Lindsey Vonn's record for most World Cup races. One.
For American, she's three away from the total record.
For overall, Ingemar Stenmark.
I'm sorry, for women, I meant to say, not American. Yep. For women.
She's number one for women.
Ingemar's got her by three, so we'll see what happens. Yep. We all watched Ingemar skate many a time. None of us were old enough, but whatever.
Nope.
Maybe Kev. Anyway, so I'm going to wrap us up here. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Gino and Kevin. Talking about the world of sports. We enjoy doing it. We hope you guys enjoy listening to it. If you have any comments, cries of hysteria, anything you want to say, anything you want to yell at us about, please make sure that you comment on Facebook with us. Let us know what it is that we're doing. G, you have a point?
Fly, Eagles, fly!
Fly, Eagles, fly. Okay, that's the way we're going to wrap it up here for all the Giant Jet fans that really can't wait to hear Philly win. You can download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be Apple, product or TuneIn or Spotify, or you can even do it on your Alexa device. Again, please let us know what you like, what you don't like, any questions, anything you want us to cover more of, let us know. We really want to do it, and comment and share the stuff that we share on social media because that helps. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
This has been the Sports Kings from Queens.